and hissed, "Miss Next, are you there?" I stood up. "Here, sir." Rochester took me by the arm and led me along the gallery and onto the landing above the stairs. He stopped, placed the candle on a low table, and clasped both my hands in his. "I thank you, Miss Next, from the bottom of my heart. It has been a living hell of torment, not knowing when or even if my beloved Jane would return." He spoke with keen and very real passion. I wondered if Landon had ever loved me as much as Rochester loved Jane. "It was the least I could do, Mr. Rochester," I responded happily, "after your kind attention to my wounds that night outside the warehouse." He dismissed my words with a wave of his hand. "You are returning straight away?" I looked down. "It's not quite as easy as that, sir. There is another interloper in this book aside from me." Rochester strode to the balustrade. He spoke without turning around. "It's him, isn't it?"
"You have met him?" I asked, surprised.
"He has several names. You have a plan?" I explained the use of a signal and made it clear that it would be safer for me to remain at Thornfield until the book had run its course. Then I would take Hades with me, somehow. "The end of the book," murmured Rochester unhappily. "How I hate the ending. The thought of my sweet Jane travelling to India with that poltroon St. John Rivers makes my blood turn to ice." He bolstered himself. "But I have at least a few months of real happiness before that time. Come, you must be hungry." He walked off down the corridor and beckoned me to follow, talking as he went. "I suggest we try and trap him when Jane has left after..." He shivered slightly at the thought of it. "The wedding. We will be quite alone as Jane takes the narrative with her to Moor House and those fatuous cousins. I am not featured again in the book, so we may do as we please, and I am best disposed to be of assistance. However, as you have guessed, you must do nothing that might disturb Jane. This novel is written in the first person. I can get away to speak with you when I am, to all intents and purposes, out of the story, but you must promise me that you will stay out of Jane's way. I will speak to Mrs. Fairfax and Adele privately. They will understand. The servants, Mary and John, will do whatever I tell them." We had arrived at a door, and Rochester knocked impatiently. There was a groaning and a thump, and presently a very dishevelled character appeared at the door. "Mrs. Fairfax," said Rochester, "this is Miss Next. She will be staying with us for a month or two. I want you to fetch her some food and have a bed made ready. She has travelled far to be here, and I think she needs sustenance and rest. It would please me if you were not to discuss her presence with anyone, and I would be grateful if you could engineer that Miss Next and Miss Eyre do not meet. I hardly need to stress the importance of this to you." Mrs. Fairfax looked me up and down, was particularly intrigued and shocked at the same time by my ponytail and jeans, and then nodded and led me off towards the dining room. "We will speak again tomorrow, Miss Next," said Rochester, a smile breaking out on his troubled face. "And I thank you once again." He turned and left me to Mrs. Fairfax, who bustled downstairs. The housekeeper told me to wait in the dining room while she brought me something to eat. She returned shortly with some cold cuts of meat and some bread. I ate hungrily as Pilate, who I thought had been let in when Hades went out, sniffed at my trouser leg and wagged his tail excitedly. "He remembers you," remarked Mrs. Fairfax slowly. "Yet I have been working here for many years, and I do not recall having laid eyes upon you before." I tickled Pilate's ear. "I threw a stick for him once, when he was out with his master."
"I see," replied Mrs. Fairfax suspiciously. "And how do you know Mr. Rochester?"
I met the Rochesters in Madeira. I knew his brother."
"I see. Very tragic." Her eyes narrowed. "And you know the Masons?"
"Not well." She had been eyeing my jeans again.
"Women wear breeches where you come from?"
"Often, Mrs. Fairfax."
"And where is it that you come from? London?"
"Farther than that."
"Ah," said Mrs. Fairfax with a knowing smile. "A sarka."
She bustled out, leaving me alone with Pilate, having made me promise that I would not feed him from the table. She returned 10 minutes later with a tray of tea things, then left me for another half hour to make up a room. She led me up to a second-story chamber with a fine view out of the front of the house. I had insisted that Pilate stay with me,
and he slept against the locked door, somehow sensing the possible danger that his new mistress might be in. I slept fitfully and dreamed of Hades laughing at me. As I slept, Victor and the others back at the Swindon Literatech office had been celebrating the return of the narrative to the novel. Apart from a brief mention of Mrs. Fairfax making noises on the night of the bedroom fire, it was all pretty much as anyone remembered it. A member of the Bronte Federation had been called in to examine the text as it wrote itself across the last 200 pages, which up until this moment had been blank. The Bronte scholar knew the book by heart, and his pleased expression gave them no cause for complaint. I woke to the sound of Pilot scratching on the door to be let out. I quietly unlocked it and peeped out. I could see Jane bustling down the corridor and quickly shut the door and looked at my watch. It was barely 6 a.m., and only a few of the domestic staff were awake. I waited a couple of minutes, let Pilot out, and then followed cautiously lest I bumped into Jane. The morning was spent with almost everyone in the house setting Rochester's room to rights, so after breakfast I was about to make my way out of the house when Mrs. Fairfax stopped me.
"Miss Next," announced the housekeeper. "Mr. Rochester has explained to me about the events of the past week, and I wanted to add my thanks to his."
She said it without emotion, but I was in no doubt that she meant it. She added,
"He has instructed me to have the house guarded against agents who would wish Miss Eyre harm."
I looked out of the window. From where we stood, I could see an estate worker standing on sentry duty with a large pickaxe handle. As we watched, he glanced into the house and scurried out of sight. A few moments later, Jane herself walked out of the door, looked about her, took a deep breath in the crisp morning air, and then went back inside. After a few moments, the estate worker reappeared and took up his post once more.
"Miss Eyre must never know we are watching and guarding her," said Mrs. Fairfax severely.
"I understand." Mrs. Fairfax nodded and looked at me critically.
"Do women go about with their heads uncovered where you come from?"
"Frequently."
"It isn't the accepted thing here," she said reproachfully. "Come with me and I shall make you presentable."
Mrs. Fairfax took me to her own room and gave me a bonnet to wear, along with a thick black cloak that covered me to my feet. I thanked her, and Mrs. Fairfax bobbed courteously.
"Is Mr. Rochester at home today?" I asked.
"He's gone to make arrangements. I understand he went to Mr. Ashton's place. There's quite a party going on. Colonel Dent will be there as well as Lord Ingram. I don't expect him back for a week."
"With all that is going on here, do you think it is wise?" Mrs. Fairfax looked at me as though I were an infant.
"You don't understand, do you? After the fire, Mr. Rochester goes away for a week. That's how it happens."
I wanted to ask more, but the housekeeper excused herself, and I was left alone. I collected my thoughts, smoothed the cloak, and went outside to walk around the house, checking that everything was secure. All the estate workers nodded to me respectfully as I passed, each of them armed with a weapon of some sort. Hoping that none of them would have to face him, I walked across the lawn in the direction that Hades had taken the previous night. I was just passing the large beeches near the ha-ha when a familiar voice made me turn.
"Do we stand a chance against him?"
It was Rochester. He was standing behind one of the large tree trunks, looking at me with grave concern etched upon his face. "Every chance, sir," I responded. "Without me, he is trapped here, and if he wants to return, he has to negotiate."
"And where is he?"
"I was going to try the town. Aren't you meant to be at Mr. Eshton's?"
"I wanted to speak to you before I left. You will do all you can, won't you?"
I assured him that I would do everything in my power, and then set off for the town. Millcote was a good-sized town. I made my way to the centre, where I found a church, a staged coach stop, 3 inns, a bank, 2 drapers, a bagged goods merchant, and assorted other trades. It was market day, and the town was busy. No one gave me a second glance as I walked through the stalls, which were piled high with winter produce and game. Apart from the faint odour of ink that pervaded the scene, it might have been real. The first hostelry I chanced across was the George. Since it was actually named in the book, I supposed it might offer the best chance. I entered and asked the innkeeper whether a man of large stature had taken a room at the inn that morning. The landlord proclaimed that he had not, but added that his was not the only inn in the town.
I thanked him and walked to the door, but was arrested by the incongruous sound of a camera shutter. I slowly turned around. Behind me were a Japanese couple, dressed in period costume, but with one of them holding a large Nikon camera. The woman hastily tried to conceal the blatant anachronism and started to drag the man out of the door.
"Wait!"
They stopped and looked nervously at one another.
"What are you doing here?"
I asked incredulously. "Visiting from Osaka," affirmed the woman, at which the man, he seemed not to speak English, nodded his head vigorously and started to consult a Bronte guidebook written in Japanese.
"How?"
"My name is Mrs. Nakijima," announced the woman, "and this is Mr. Suzuki." The man grinned at me and shook my hand excitedly.
"This is crazy," I said angrily. "Are you trying to tell me that you two are tourists?"
"Indeed," admitted Mrs. Nakajima. "I make the jump once a year and bring a visitor with me. We touch nothing and never speak to Miss Eyre. As you can see, we are dressed fittingly."
"Japanese? In mid-19th century England?"
"Why not?" "Why not indeed?"
"How do you manage it?"
The woman shrugged. "I just can. I think hard, speak the lines, and, well, here I am." I didn't have time for this at all. "Listen to me. My name is Thursday Next. I work with Victor Analogy at the Literatech office in Swindon. You heard about the theft of the manuscript." She nodded her head. "There is a dark presence in this book, but my plan to extract him is dependent on there being only one way in and one way out. He will stop at nothing to use you to get out if he can. I implore you to jump back home while you still can." Mrs. Nakajima consulted for some time with her client. She explained that Mr. Suzuki was hoping to see Jane if possible, but that if he were taken back now, he would want a refund. I reiterated my position on the matter, and they eventually agreed. I followed them to their room upstairs and waited while they packed. Mrs. Nakajima and Mr. Suzuki both shook me by the hand, held on to each other, and evaporated. I shook my head sadly. It seemed there were very few places that the tourist business hadn't touched. I left the warmth of the inn for the chill exterior and made my way past a stall selling late root vegetables and on to the Millcote, where I inquired about any new guests.
"Who would be wanting to see Mr. Hedge?" inquired the innkeeper, spitting into and then polishing a crude beer mug.
"Tell him Miss Next is here to see him."
The innkeeper vanished upstairs and returned presently.
"Room 7,
he replied shortly, and returned to his duties. Acheron was sitting by the window, his back to the door. He didn't move when I entered.
"Hello, Thursday."
"Mr. Hedge?"
"Locals in mid-19th century England are a superstitious lot. I thought Hades might seem a little strong for them."
He turned to face me, his piercing blue eyes seeming to look straight into me. But his power over me had waned. He could not read me as he had others. He sensed this immediately, gave a half-smile, and resumed staring out of the window.
"You grow strong, Miss Next."
"I thrive on adversity." He gave a short laugh.
"I should have made quite sure of you back at Stick's apartment."
"And spoil all the fun? Your life would be considerably more dull without me and the rest of Spec Ops to louse it up." He ignored me and changed the subject.
"Someone as resourceful as you would never have come in here without a way out. What is it, Thursday? A prearranged code to let Mycroft know when to open the door?"
"Something like that. If you give me the instruction manual and Polly, I promise you shall have a fair trial." Hades laughed.
"I think I am way beyond a fair trial, Thursday. I could kill you now, and I feel a strong urge to do precisely that, but the prospect of being trapped in this narrative for all time bars me from that action. I tried to get to London, but it's impossible. The only towns that exist in this world are the places that Charlotte Bronte wrote about, and which feature in the narrative. Gateshead, Lowood. I'm surprised that there is even as much of this town. Give me the code word to get out, and you can have the manual and Polly."
"No, you give me the manual of my aunt first."
"You see? Impasse. You'll want to wait until the book is written again, though, won't you?"
Of course.
Then you...